Welcome to Crypto Kid Podcast. Thank you for listening in and tuning in on YouTube. So today I have a special guest, Henry and Roshan. I think I'm saying that right. If I'm not,
pretty close. Russian.
I'm sorry. We went over this before the show, but that's my fault. But they're going to be explaining what they do and how they got into blockchain technology and how they're pushing on with the dominoes in the technology and making it wide stream. So thank you guys for coming on the show and go let us know what you guys are about.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having us on, Sunny. And so we, Henry and I both co-founded Decimal Digital Currency. We initially launched the company focused purely on Ethereum mining. Grew that into a pretty substantial platform back in 2015, 2016, and then in 2017, we were about to take the company public through a reverse merger on the Toronto Stock Exchange, and ended up pulling the ripcord on that deal for a variety of reasons, and glad we did it. And then in 2020, we pivoted the company, relaunched, and went all in on Bitcoin mining. So that's the current state of the company today. We have facilities across the United States. We have five currently and are actively looking to expand that the operation.
Great deal. Any plans on coming to Florida?
You know, the power costs and the heat are both impediments to coming into Florida, but it'd be great to be there, certainly from a tax perspective.
Okay. Yeah, they say everything is cheaper down here in Florida, but
we'll see.
So what are some of your products and services that you guys offer?
Yeah, so Decimal has one main flagship vehicle, and that is we did an equity round back in 2020 and 2021. We raised a pretty decent amount of capital. Bought machines, newest generation machines, had them deployed across a variety of sites in the United States. So we stopped raising, we closed that fund. It's not technically a fund, but we closed that vehicle entirely for new investments. And we launched something called a separate managed account offering. And with that service, we enable investors, family offices, high net worth individuals to acquire mining machines. We buy it for them, leveraging our relationships and supplier network, and get them extremely preferential pricing. And then we deploy those machines in one of our sites, and we manage every aspect of mining from soup to nuts. So we get the machines online, we run firmware on it. We handle all of the liquidation strategies, the risk management, the security, the hedging, and we have a profit share arrangement with those investors. So that's the vehicle that we like right now, and it's proven to be quite successful because investors are getting quite oversized returns, downside protection, and significant tax benefits with the accelerated appreciation.
Okay, so. So back in the day, people just, it was so easy to mine. And now you need practically a whole warehouse to be able to function these operations. And so it sounds like you're making it easier for people to get involved with mining, but are you considering them as investors or just our client? Can they be clients too? Like customers, customers in a way.
Yeah, I mean, kind of synonymous in the way in which we've done it. They're our clients, and they've they're our customers, and they've chosen to invest, and we're giving them exposure to Bitcoin in a responsible manner.
Okay, good deal. Now, why are you guys so different from other companies?
I know this is a cocky statement. I'll say it anyway. And by the way, this is not me patting myself on the back because I don't take credit for it. But I think the majority of miners have no clue what they're doing. I think this is not an industry that's as simple as buying machines and plugging them in and now all of a sudden you're accumulating Bitcoin. I think there's a lot that goes into it. I think the industry not to say that it's saturated, but it's certainly become more competitive, particularly as mining difficulty increases, and now with the halving approaching. So I do think that there's staying on top of the latest generation equipment, optimizing it, making sure that you've got power contracts that you're protected within, that are fixed, you're hedged. I don't necessarily believe in simply just mining Bitcoin and then holding on to it, hoping that the price goes up. I think that that's pretty foolish. And so, I give a lot of credit to Henry and our other partner, extremely analytical guys, and always thinking about the edge and how we can be outperforming other miners. And maybe Henry can talk a little bit about, specifically how we're different mm-hmm. than the secret sauce.
Yeah, Henry, sure. Can you give an introduction of yourself first, and then how you got involved? And then you can answer that question.
So I'm Henry. I'm also co-founded Decimal Digital with Roshan, and as he mentioned before that, we were mining Ethereum together at a pretty substantial scale. We switched to Bitcoin ahead of the Ethereum merge, which was a replacement of its consensus mechanism with something called proof of stake. And long story short, that means no more Ethereum mining. So long before that happened, we stopped investing in it and pivoted to Bitcoin mining. Something that you said earlier, that to be effective in this industry requires, a big warehouse and such. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into it. And the specific work done in the, having the right layout, even within your data center, is very important. Managing heat is a big piece of a Bitcoin miner's operations. Every single energy market is different. Contracts to interact with these energy markets are different. The collateral requirements in these energy markets are different. So there's very much a, let's say, case-by-case approach to each of our deployments, so that we fit our risk model to whatever is available there, or to whatever the situation dictates. In Bitcoin mining, I think when Roshan says most miners don't know what they're doing, I think the reason for that is greed. I think what most miners are trying to do is make the last dollar. They say, okay, I want to make as many possible dollars as I can, so I'm going to assume the most bullish outcome, and I'm going to position myself to make all the money in the world during that bullish outcome. And then if we look at over the last 2 years, the perfect example of what's happened to the industry is that outcome did not materialize. The opposite of it happened. With inflation running costs up, we saw natural gas go from $2 to $8. That put a great deal of stress on miners who did not have their power hedged or fixed in some way. On top of that, we've seen competition quadruple or quintuple over the same period. Network hash rate used to be under 100 exahashes. We've recently seen 550. Then the other component is that Bitcoin, the Bitcoin that we mine, as a long-term, let's say, Bitcoin position, we don't really care what the price is today. But if you need to pay your power bill and you're mining one Bitcoin a day or a month, let's say, and your power bill is more than the price of that Bitcoin, then you're out of business. What even further exacerbated that across the industry, again, total greed, is many, many Bitcoin miners took on extreme amounts of debt at very high costs, 18, 24, I even saw 30% interest on some of these firms in order to maximize their market share during the bull market. And basically what they did was they gave their companies away to their lenders. They gave all their machines away to their lenders. So all of that death and destruction by these greedy mistakes over this period has created a great deal of opportunity for those of us who managed our risks and who kept a... So what we believe the best thesis, the best business plan for a Bitcoin miner is you have to set yourself up so that almost no matter what happens in your environment, no matter what happens to Bitcoin price, no matter what happens to your competition, that you survive, that you have positive cash flow in any of those scenarios. And if that's the case, and you keep evolving your business, you keep replacing your equipment with newer hardware, bringing your power costs down, getting more efficient, getting your cooling better, and keeping that positive margin in the outcome, that means that you survive until the next parabolic spike of Bitcoin and you make back these huge returns. And that's the business plan for Decimal, is that during, let's say, modest margins for Bitcoin mining, we're growing, we're building our footprint, we're certain that our margins never turn negative due to our hedging and the machines we picked. And then when a bull market comes, we make triple digit returns in a year.
Okay. Yeah, it's, I'm glad you mentioned about gas prices too. So that would lead me to my next question. So what about solar? Can you use solar power to help you mine?
Sure. So in the very first mining operation I had, it was in my house. It was in my garage. I brought in an electrical service and I looked at putting solar on the roof. And if I'd put solar on the entire roof of my house, it would have covered the entire, an entire year of generating power with that solar would have covered 19 days of mining effort with my, my tiny little mine in my garage. So the amount of energy you generate is compared in terms of density. You need acres and acres and acres and acres of solar panels to power a very small Bitcoin mine. That's not really a big deal on the industrial scale, because it's fine to build acres of solar. But for the smaller you get, the less it makes sense. But on the other hand, there is a great deal of synergy with solar and also wind for the same reason and Bitcoin mining. And the reason is that solar power generation and wind power generation, they cannot choose when they generate their power. They do it when the sun is shining and they do it when the wind is blowing. And the worst thing for them is if that does not line up with the best pricing in the market. If they're generating all of their energy when there's not really demand for energy, then they're not a profitable project. And that's a big problem facing renewable energy today. It makes it very hard to develop it. Us as Bitcoin miners, we step in, we're always buying the power. We'll do it all day long. We're happy to buy it from the solar farms when nobody else will. We're happy to buy it from the wind farms when nobody else will. We're their perfect customer. We're their best friend. And we make it possible for renewable energy projects to be invested in. If you have a Bitcoin mine right next door to it, then you know that they always have a customer, and that changes the model for them.
Okay. Yeah. Investors start losing their ass if the weather starts to take a turn. They'll be like, well, man, we're losing out. And yeah, I could get the concern. So that's cool. So tell me about your facilities in Texas and Ohio. It's funny that you mentioned Texas, though. I thought it was going to be too hot or, it wasn't really energy efficient.
Sure. Heat is definitely an issue at Bitcoin, in Bitcoin mining. Heat management is a big issue. Things that you can do to help with that, of course, are increasing the airflow. That's a kind of obvious one. The other is having less heat density. There's a variety of machines. Some of them use 3000 watts. Some of them use 4,500 watts, the newer, bigger ones. And the more tightly you pack your power consumption, the harder it is to deal with the heat. So we're using our more efficient machines with less power per footprint in the hotter states. That's our answer to it. And maybe Roshan is great at going through our sites. Maybe he can touch on just more of an overview on Texas and Ohio.
Yeah, no. So Texas, we have two different sites. We have one in Granbury, Texas, originally developed by Compute North. The site was ultimately seized by General Rate Capital, and then more recently was acquired by the largest publicly traded mining company in the United States. So we're within that site, unbelievable state of the art infrastructure, and fortunate to be there with incredibly low cost of power. And then more recently, we opened up a site right outside Houston with a JV partner. Really sophisticated team that's there, and we're continuing to grow our footprint within that site as well. And then more recently, just last week, we set up this new site in Ohio with another partner, and we're just coming online. Literally, as of yesterday, that those machines started coming online. Henry was there, said it's an incredible facility. I'm flying out there next weekend. As well.
Awesome. Yeah. So can people come and check the facilities out? Is it open to the public or?
Well, our investors and clients can come anytime they'd like, but no, they're all secure sites, and And there are some protocols to be able to get in to visit them and inspect them.
Okay, so how do people become investors? Like, is there a website that they go to, or do they have to go to your office personally to get involved? What's the process in that?
I mean, I think it's as simple as just sending Henry an email or sending me an email and, you know, getting on a call. Henry's fantastic at educating people on the industry, on mining, on cryptocurrencies in general. We're always raising capital. We've raised a significant amount already in 2024, love talking to new potential investors.
Great deal. Now, what do you see trending with cryptos and Bitcoin, et cetera?
So Bitcoin is integrating itself bit by bit into the global financial system. I think we're at a point where everybody agrees that Bitcoin is here to stay. We have the largest asset managers in the world publishing education on why to invest in Bitcoin. And of course, all these ETFs launching has been a moment of validation for the industry. Looking forward, Bitcoin is positioned to become a reserve asset for the world. And we don't believe that it'll necessarily replace all money, like you know some theories believe. But Bitcoin has a place as a global asset that has no specific currency risk to a country, to a country's economy, to a country's government policy, particularly that drives the values of currencies. It doesn't have exposure to a country's economy. And it also, it's instantly transmittable. It has no cost of storage. It can be used as collateral. So what we expect is, as Bitcoin keeps appreciating in price and keeps distributing itself out further into the world, into more hands, particularly into 401ks, pensions, insurance companies, retirement accounts, those kinds of things, long-term investors, long-term holders, we believe that it can step into a sort of similar role to the U.S. Treasury bond today, which is used as collateral for global debt. So what we expect is people to start buying Bitcoin with the intention of never selling it, borrowing against it to access the liquidity, and then using those borrowed funds for further investments, operations, or just liquidity in general.
Yeah, treating it like a life insurance policy is what I was told, how to look at it.
That's a great way to look at it, yep.
But yeah, I'm glad you brought ETFs. Let's talk about that. I see you got a lot of coverage from some of your comments. Can you go into more?
Sure. So the ETFs have created some short-term price action that, frankly, we expected. A huge amount of volatility, a big spike up all the way to 48,000 something, and then now it's down to, I think, under 41 it touched. And the reason for that is there's a huge amount of turnover. We've seen, as of this morning, BlackRock has scooped up 25,000 Bitcoins into their fund. There's a huge amount of buying going on. But at the same time, GBTC, the Grayscale vehicle, is at its fee is six times as much. So many investors who were in some ways trapped in the Grayscale vehicle because they bought in at a time when there was a premium, which created an arbitrage. So what investors would do is they would buy Bitcoin for, let's say, $10,000. They'd put it in the Grayscale trust, and they would get $12,000 of credit because the Grayscale trust was kind of the only game in town then, so it commanded a premium. And then it fell to a discount during the bear market, so it's been all over the place. But now that it's kind of normalized, it's really just that fee that's driving people to move from it. There's no reason to pay a percentage and a half as an annual maintenance fee on your Bitcoin when it costs nothing to store. In our belief, even 25 basis points is too much, but it provides access to particularly the 401ks, the pensions, the insurance companies, the vehicles that would have a hard time handling private keys on their own, handling self-custody. That's who the ETFs are for, is a way that they can get very low cost direct exposure to Bitcoin.
All right. Yeah. And going back to what you said earlier about cryptocurrency not being, not taking away fiat currency. What, let's look at Venezuela, El Salvador,
mm-hmm.
changing their currency just to Bitcoin. So there, I feel like there is that it can, but can you give me more reasons on why you think we can't if El Salvador is already doing it?
Sure. You know, I don't think it's a matter of whether we can or cannot. I think it's a matter of timing.
Okay.
And across the world, if you think about how payments flow, how wealth flows, how commerce is done, there's a huge amount of infrastructure that's been put in place over the last 30, 40, 50 years to facilitate that. All of that infrastructure needs to be rebuilt and replaced. The next component with crypto, let's say crypto facilitating systems, and that's a huge amount of work. The next piece is education. Unlike a credit card, for example, that is pretty safe for the average consumer today. You swipe your credit card, you buy your thing. If someone else swipes your credit card, you call them up, you say it wasn't you, you get your money back. There's no such thing as that in crypto. These are bearer assets. If someone takes your password, it's gone. And that risk is probably the number one barrier to the layman adopting cryptocurrencies because it's so dangerous, because it's so risky. So what's happening now, though, is we have a generation of people, anybody under 30 really, grew up with technology. They didn't grow into technology. And as the world keeps spinning and people who were born in the digital age become most of the people or all of the people eventually, right? Over the decades, a much higher proportion of the population will understand digital security, will understand best practices in a digital medium, will be less susceptible to scammers and other kinds of thieves. So I think that those are the two things, is that all the infrastructure needs to get built is one, and then education of the masses of how to really handle crypto is two. And the ingredient that's missing is time. Right now, there's not enough time has gone by for it to happen. Crypto is a very new industry, right? Barely, not even two decades old.
Right. It's almost right there with the internet. I think the internet came out in like the 90s, am I correct? So, or I was born in 90s. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Yeah, it depends what you call the internet. I mean, those systems. But yeah, I mean, ubiquitous for everyone to start using. You can say the early 90s. And I've seen some interesting data if on the rate of adoption, how quickly new users get onboarded. And crypto has done it much more quickly than the internet did.
Yeah, it's a rapid growth. It's almost insane. But there's still a lot of countries out there, like third world countries, that don't have access to the luxuries as us Americans do, or people from like London or South Korea or Japan. You know, Japan's like one of the most almost the number one tech country in the world. They're always coming out with some things new. But yeah, man, do you have as we come to a close, do you have anything you want to share that we didn't cover, or anything that's going to happen with your business? I know you guys have something coming out. Can you share that, or?
Roshan?
Henry?
I thought maybe you'd...
Yeah, no, I think one area to cover would be, Sunny, what's on a lot of people's mind and is right around the corner. It happens every 4 years, is the halving. And I think that there are a lot of people who don't necessarily understand what that means and the impact, particularly on miners. And I know Henry has done a significant amount of analysis and modeling to come to a to have a position on the impact of that halving. So that could be an area that we may want to touch upon as well. It's given the relevance and timing.
Sure.
Okay. Great deal. Good answer. Okay. So is there any links that you guys want to drop so people can find you, and any events that you guys are going to be attending?
I think we'll be back on the circuit this year, attending the Bitcoin conference in Nashville, likely Mining Disrupt. I know there's an event in Dubai and Texas Blockchain. But yeah, Henry's email is Henry@decimalgroup.io. And before we drop, maybe Henry, you could share, because I do think Sunny, for your audience, it'd be good to hear about what's in store with the halving.
With the halving, sure.
Yeah,
so
go for
my
it, man.
Perspective is from that of a miner, of course, right? I'm a Bitcoin miner. So the halving to us, what that means exactly is that, and I'm gonna not speak exactly technically here to just communicate the ideas more easily. Every 10 minutes, the schedule is every 10 minutes, the Bitcoin network creates brand new Bitcoin and issues it to miners. That's how new Bitcoin comes into existence, gets added to the ledger. So the schedule is that every 4 years, that amount of brand new Bitcoin gets reduced by half. So today, the brand new Bitcoin created is about 900 per day. Miners also earn transaction fees on top of that, which have been between 30 and 50 per day, you could say. There have been a few times where it spiked up to, actually, there were a couple times where it spiked over that, well, where the block reward exceeded the free Bitcoin, you could call it, created by the network. So in April, when the halving occurs, that 900 new Bitcoin per day, that will be reduced to 450 new Bitcoin per day. And that effectively doubles your cost of production per Bitcoin if you filter out the transaction fees, because you're spending the same amount of computing power, the same amount of effort, the same amount of electricity to earn half as much Bitcoin. So if a Bitcoin miner today, with Bitcoin's price at 40,000, if they're spending, let's say, $30,000 of electricity because of their energy costs or the efficiency of their machines to produce that Bitcoin, and then the halving occurs, and suddenly they have to spend $60,000 of electricity to produce the same Bitcoin, they're in trouble. And what happens then is that they turn off their machines and their competition falls off from the network, and then everybody else earns the Bitcoin that they would have earned. So Decimal's perspective is to always sit as the most efficient miners. We don't dabble in cheap stuff. We don't make, again, greedy bets to capture as much market share as we can. Instead, we focus on margin protection. We operate the most efficient machines. We focus on low costs of power. We participate in grid programs to lower our power even more. So I think the halving will be a kind of, let's say, a test of truth, who's real and who's not. You know, when the tide comes out, you can tell who's naked. So the the miners that are making those greedy mistakes, come April, we'll see many, many, many more of them get destroyed effectively, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of people end up going bankrupt. They lose their houses. They get a divorce. Just like a lot of bad things. I'm glad you guys are protecting, and that's what it's all about. You know, when people ask me how much should I invest, I always say, don't put in more than you're willing to afford to lose. It's just, I had a friend that literally maxed out all his credit cards at the time that you were allowed to buy cryptocurrencies with credit cards, and his account got hacked, like you were saying, security issues. And I felt so bad for
That's
him
horrible.
Because I'm the one who got him involved in it. So I'm just like, honestly, guys, you can't rely on me to give you all this information. You got to like do your own due diligence, do your research, see what you can do. And, if you feel like you could lose 10 bucks, hey, it's just 10 bucks. If it's not like life threatening to you, or if it's not going to take food off your table, then yeah, go ahead. Put it in the Bitcoin, but don't put like thousands and thousands of dollars, and then you're feeling ass hurt about it at the end of the day, because shit happens. That's just the way it goes. The market is so volatile right now, and I really appreciate you explaining the halving, because people are getting so hyped and new investors, and they just don't realize mm-hmm. the risk that's involved. Just like, no, let's sit back a minute. I mean, I know you see it all over the news, but you gotta like take precaution and see what's going on and actually educate yourself and go to the experts. Like you guys, I would consider you guys experts, because you know a great deal, and it's been awesome having you guys on the show. And all the links that you guys gave me is going to be in the description down below. And I really look forward to talking to you guys again in the future, or meeting up with you in Texas around the conference. Actually, here's a funny thing about me. I'm actually from Texas, El Paso part. So it'd be like going back home to see family and things like that. But Yeah, guys. Sure. Anything else?
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
this
just
was, this. Was, sorry, go ahead, Henry.
Oh, yeah. Just on your last comment, you know, you mentioned that education is important, and you know how to keep yourself safe as an investor in this. And I think that that's probably the most important. If you're looking to invest in cryptocurrencies, your next course of action should be to learn as much as possible. And if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. Be patient. Don't invest out of hope or greed. You know, if you find yourself putting money in something, it should be because you completely understand it, or you know, feel like you completely understand it, and especially know the risks. You understand why it can go wrong and that you're comfortable with that. That's my advice I give to everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I've been buying Bitcoin for quite a while, but I'll tell you now, I've been concentrating quite a lot of capital into mining, because it does give you that downside protection, right? We were talking to somebody, a potential investor who was looking to come in for a significant amount of capital. This is back when Bitcoin was around $60,000, and he said, "You know what? Bitcoin's on a tear. I'm just going to go out. I'm going to go buy the asset itself. Why do I want to get into mining? Because Bitcoin's going to continue to go up." And I said, "Sure, Bitcoin will continue to go up in the long run, but it'll be pretty volatile in the interim." So we went out, bought Bitcoin at 60,000, and of course, Bitcoin then cratered to 15. So, you know, he sold, lost a ton of money. If he had put that same amount of capital into mining, he would have been making money with us each and every day. And so that's why I think, you know, mining is a good alternative for those people who are looking to get exposure to crypto, but without going out and buying the asset or buying the tokens or coins directly.
Missed opportunities, man. Don't you hate that when that happens? Yeah,
there'll be others.
So get involved with Desmo Digital Currency. And thanks again, guys, for coming on the show. And I wish you the best with your endeavors.
Thanks, Sonny. Terrific. Right. Appreciate you having us.
Anytime.